If we all kill it as a team, then we'll naturally just ship better products, we'll naturally talk more, we'll naturally point things out and try to fix them. If we think back to like 2007 when I was just starting up Ministry of Testing, there were just a handful of people who were blogging. And now it's just like people contributing everywhere. For me, that's just like a sign that people care about testing. That's so good to see.
Hi, I'm Eden Fulgo, and you're listening to How It's Tested, a monthly series where we discuss great products, how they're tested, and other stories from the testing community, featuring interviews with tech leaders, founders, testing experts, and creators. How It's Tested is brought to you by Heavybit, the leading investor in developer-first startups. For more information, visit heavybit.com. If you're interested in being a guest on this show, or if you would like to suggest a topic, find us on Twitter at Team Mobot. That's TEAMMOBOT. On today's episode, I'm speaking with Rosie Sherry. She's the founder and CEO of the Ministry of Testing. And we're going to be talking about her experiences in the industry and what it's like to actually build a leading community of practice for software testers and quality engineers. Hi, Rosie. Thank you so much for joining us on the How It's Tested podcast today.
Thanks, Ethan, for having me.
I know you have a ton of experience building and founding testing communities, curating them. You know, a lot of that is, of course, based on your own personal experiences in your career early on in the software industry. And so would really love to kind of hear from you in your own words, kind of your journey today, up until today, and kind of what led you to ultimately start Ministry of Testing, which is one of the longest standing communities in the industry. And, you know, I've seen resources and events again and again and again. And so it's really cool to have a chance to talk to you about it and hear kind of like how you started Ministry of Testing. And also, I think, you know, the conversation today about where our industry is headed is going to be really exciting.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, where should I start? I mean, I've been in tech testing. My first job in tech was a testing job. Very junior, no experience in tech in any kind of way. And that was around the year 2000. I was working in a bank, actually, so I didn't actually have a role as a tester initially, but I had an opportunity to UAT test an app that they were building. And I kind of used that on my CV to get my first proper job in testing. Like a few months later, I used that like as a way to say like I had a bit of experience in testing, right? But yeah, I mean, like I guess like the year 2000, it feels like a whole different era than it is today, a whole different world. Testing back then was as it is like really different from what it is today. There was a lot of manual stuff, not a lot of information out there for testers. A lot of corporate testing, I guess, and a lot of processes, not necessarily very efficient testing, in my opinion, but, you know, it is what it is. And, yeah, I guess, like, I got my first job in testing and at a local web media company. And basically, like, as soon as you get a first job and something, it kind of becomes easier to move on to the next thing. Or find the next opportunity. So, like, within a year, I already had another job in testing, doing something much more technical that was, to be honest, like, way over my head. I didn't really understand the whole systems under test. It was quite intense. But, yeah, it was around that time. It was a dot-com boom, like, 2001, and I ended up getting laid off. And after that, I kind of went into, I did like freelance testing. I did contracts to local companies, worked on some fun projects. And I just kept doing that for a few years whilst also hanging out in our local tech community in Brighton. I live in Brighton in the UK. So mixing like the local meetups kind of exposed me to the world of, or the concept of community. And I ran some local meetups and I just got hooked on the idea of community whilst also continuing my career as a tester. And then, yeah, the more I did community, the more I was like, how can I make community my thing? How can I build community? And as part of that, I decided, because I knew about testing and there wasn't really a lot out there for testers, I felt a bit jealous of like what web designers had at the time. There's, you know, a lot of great content, a lot of people talking about things to advance the web industry. And I just felt like there was never anything really around for testers. So I started Ministry of Testing at that point, and that was 2007. And when I started it, I called it the Software Testing Club. So it started as an online web-hosted forum. And really, I just did it because I wanted an excuse to build community, basically. And I really didn't have any expectations that I would go anywhere. And I didn't push it rapidly. I just like kept trying to have fun and have interesting conversations, basically trying to create a space that I felt was valuable and for myself and for the community. And I did that for about 3 years before it got kind of like a lot to manage. By that time, I had 2 kids as well, so I was managing that in my life. And after 3 years, I kind of told myself that I had to turn it into a business or I would stop doing it because it was just like sucking up so much of my time. That was when I decided to start a conference as a way to kind of try to make a living from the community. As they say, the rest is history. Yeah, we kept growing as a conference and as a place that kind of provided education. And then we created an online platform. And then people started asking us for conferences elsewhere. So we did conferences elsewhere. And 2019, we held 9 conferences across the globe, which was a bit nuts, to be honest. I don't think we'd ever do that again. But then, yeah, obviously the pandemic hit and things have changed since then. We've gone back to 1 a year and kind of changed our strategy around that. But yeah, it's definitely been a journey.
I mean, it's incredible to just like even thinking about, you know, you were talking about the dot-com boom. And ever since, you know, since you started Ministry of Testing, I feel like there's been more browsers and desktop configurations that have started up, the introduction of mobile devices, how the iOS and Android ecosystems have evolved. And I think there's just been so much evolution and change in the industry. And I think the role of testing has also evolved as Selenium and Appium frameworks, Detox, Maestro, all of these kind of frameworks have started appearing. And so I guess I'm curious, like, from when you started Ministry of Testing in like 2007 to, you know, even now, like the sort of the programming, the content, I'm assuming, you know, there used to be more of a focus on kind of like manual testing when that was more prevalent, but the shift of kind of like the skill set, the technical skills that testers are looking to develop, that has evolved. I'd be curious to kind of hear your observations and reflections on just like what's kind of been the shift and yeah, the kind of content or the kind of programming, the kind of community, like how has that changed over the last couple decades?
Yeah, I mean, it's changed so much. And I think that's a sign of like a healthy industry, I guess. That it has changed so much, right? And so many of those of what exists today wasn't around like 15 years ago. I think definitely the industry has its specialisms, whether it's automation or specific tools or specific areas of knowledge. I think testers are also generalists at the same time. So there's like, I guess maybe there's push and pull between being a specialist and a generalist in the fact that to do good testing, quite often you need to know a lot about everything. You need to, like, you know, speak with your customers or understand the market or speak with various people in the team. There's that aspect of it. It's like there's no one else probably in teams that are doing that, right? Like developers have their head down doing like dev work and designers are so focused on design, but like testers are kind of often spread across teams trying to help improve so many potential areas. There's definitely like a shift towards like so much more technical skills, but at the same time, I think like technical skills are often like overrated and sometimes we just need like good communication skills or good understanding of systems and processes. And I think a lot of software these days are not necessarily failing because of technical problems, but it's more like people problems or process problems. And perhaps that's where a lot of testers struggle, like, I guess, in like the recruitment process. Technical skills are often like demanded up front, but often they're not actually needed nearly as much as they are in reality. And so it kind of has this kind of mismatch of expectations. I know a lot of automation experts who actually don't do a lot of automation day to day. I think the same happens for developers, right? It's like you get hired as a developer, and a lot of developers often get stuck doing different work than actually coding. For me, it's just great to see so much change. And I like to look back in like chunks of years or like 5-year chunks and just think about where the community was or where the industry was in like 5 years ago or 10 years ago. And it's when you look at it from that perspective that you really start to notice like how things have changed.
Yeah, it's interesting what you were bringing up earlier about how oftentimes, like, you know, when something is not working on a product or, you know, at a company, it's not because like the testing process was flawed or something. It is usually like a breakdown in communication or some other skill gap or business process gap. And I've definitely seen that pattern across some of the engineering and QA and product teams and marketing teams that we work with at Mobot is oftentimes like, oh, the test case didn't even define the product specifications correctly because the product manager or something never specified like what the expected behavior of a product was supposed to be. So, you know, how is a regression test case supposed to be defined if there isn't even like a UAT best practice that was applied before something was brought on and implemented? And so I'm curious, like the kinds of conversations that you've had with the community and you know, because I'm sure this comes up a lot, is just like testing is often seen as a process that happens after everything else. You know, quality assurance is sometimes not prioritized as much as design or engineering, but all of these processes need to work together. But I'm curious, like, what are some of the observations you've seen over the last few years to kind of bring quality assurance and testing closer to the other functions to kind of resolve some of the issues and patterns that we've kind of seen appear where if testing and quality is an afterthought rather than part of the original development cycle, you know, things just don't go as well when shipping releases.
Yeah, I guess like two kind of trends that come to mind. One is like QA managers, there's definitely like a lot less of them these days. And there's not as many kind of test teams on their own in their silo, and testers often end up as part of a overall tech team, I guess, or specific areas. So they're more muddled in with the developers and designers and working more directly in there. And as a result, there's obviously less QA managers, but maybe there's more engineering managers as a result, or I've seen testers who end up going into engineering management as kind of a career path as well. So, you know, that's quite interesting. And it's really nice to see like some of the members in the community who we've seen like, I guess, like grow up or advance their career and watching them being like engineering leaders. And I think that's, for me at least, it's wonderful to see. It's like, you know, almost like there's this respect for our background as professional testers that we do know what we're doing, or we do understand how products work and how to manage them. And then the other one that springs to mind is quality coach has been talked about a lot more recently. Vernon Richards is someone who's spoken about it, and Emna Ayadi recently at TestBash also did a talk about being a quality coach. It's, you know, that's more like people who are often testers, but more, you know, more focused on quality overall. They come in and they support the team to improve the quality overall in a coaching way. And they're not necessarily going to be there forever. It might be temporary, but it's more like educational and support to help the team look for risks or improve their processes and things like that.
I guess just to make sure I understand kind of the way that you're defining the difference between testing versus quality, quality is more kind of the long-term overarching structure of how that process fits into the product development of a piece of software. And testing is kind of more like the one-off task that's done at a release to kind of just, you know, test to get a release out the door. Am I understanding that correctly? Or how would you kind of define quality versus testing?
Yeah, it's a bit of a topic, to be honest. It's like, what do we call our people in the industry of testing? Because these days, some people call themselves testers or automation experts, but some people call themselves like quality assurance professionals. Others are now calling themselves like quality engineering professionals or testers. And I'm not in the position to define it, to be honest, but quality is culture, right? That's kind of how I see it. It's like testing can't force quality culture. It can support it. Or maybe like quality coaching is something that supports a quality culture, right? It's more, it's not necessarily testing. But yeah, I just think there's a lot of overlap, and probably testers are somewhat generalists as well. So they're testing, but they're also supporting the quality culture of the company. They're also trying to think of the users. You know, they're trying to look at the software from many perspectives that other people wouldn't be. So there's definitely a Venn diagram there, I think, between testing and quality. And what's that bit in the middle? I'm not sure off the top of my head.
I really love that, what you just said about quality being a cultural thing. And I think that applies across the whole organization. And it isn't something that only testers or quality engineers or quality analysts care about. You know, the product manager needs to care about quality and needs to buy into the culture. The customer support team that's fielding all of the production issue complaints from users and then funneling that back to engineering and funneling that back to the quality team, they need to be bought in as stakeholders of the quality culture at the company. And you know, business units that are defining deadlines for what features are being A/B tested and all of that, like everybody needs to be bought in and needs to understand and prioritize that quality is important at an organization. And I think that the way you put it was really helpful. Curious, like how your community has recommended quality being integrated back into the larger organization beyond just like a community of testers. How are folks encouraged to talk to product managers or marketing folks across the company to make sure that testing and quality are kind of embedded across the company throughout?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one. I think like in some senses, like testers often being embedded in part of the team naturally brings that up, right? So they're not necessarily sitting on their own in the corner doing their work. It's, you know, more collaborative. And I think just the world of tech has gone that way with Agile, with DevOps type stuff. Yeah, I just think it's really hard for testers to do good work on their own. And I just like hope in general that like the days of like bugs being released into production and testers getting the blame of it, you know, I really hope that's well into the past. I feel like it is. And I guess like what also springs to mind is like, you know, having a culture of care across organizations. I talk a lot about care in terms of the community work I do. It's like if we all care as a team, then we'll naturally just ship better products. We'll naturally talk more. We'll naturally point things out and try to fix them. So for me, it's like, I just love the aspect of people that care about the work that they're doing. And if anything, I think the testing community, they've, you know, really come leaps and bounds from that perspective. Like if we think back to like 2007, when I was just starting up Ministry of Testing, you know, there were just a handful of people who were blogging and generally white men. And now it's just like there's so many blogs, there's so, you know, there's YouTube channels, there's people contributing everywhere. It's so hard to keep up, right? And for me, that's just like a sign that people care about testing. That's so good to see.
Yeah, I've definitely seen kind of what you're saying about this like pod structure where testers and quality engineers are integrated more into the broader team. Like I've seen, you know, there's a transactions team, there's a app activations team, and, you know, each of those teams have, you know, a couple of engineers, a product manager, a designer, and then a quality assurance tester or quality assurance engineer. And they're kind of embedded together. And then also when issues come through, there's definitely clearer lines of ownership that like, hey, this whole team owns this feature. And so, you know, it isn't the tester's fault, right? Everybody needed to kind of be defining and shipping it together. So yeah, there's definitely been in the last like 5 years, I've seen that same pattern too across some of the teams that we get to work with that like that. That's becoming more and more prevalent. And I think, you know, it's exciting to see where the industry will continue to shift as I hope more teams continue to adopt this.
Absolutely.
Going back to one of your other points from earlier, you were sort of saying, you know, job descriptions for QA folks, when they get hired, the job description says, oh, you need this and this automation experience. And it's actually, you know, a almost like kind of deceptively technical skill, which obviously it is incredibly important that every, you know, many testers are technical, especially now as our industry has evolved, but they kind of join in, you know, join the team and then end up having to deal with all of these other business pressures, business priorities, and they're not doing as much technical automation as, you know, maybe originally depicted in the job description. I'm curious how you think AI has changed, you know, kind of this challenge, or if it's going to continue to change this challenge. Curious if you've already kind of seen that in some of the folks in your community.
Yeah, I mean, at our conference that we had just last month, Test Bash, we had a whole day dedicated to AI in testing. And we've been exploring AI this year with a couple of online events as well. I think AI is interesting. I guess the way I see it at the moment is it's definitely early days, and there's still feels like the outputs of AI, people don't trust it. There's a lot of hallucination type stuff and just crazy stuff that it outputs. But it's, you know, I think it's interesting. It's almost like, I guess like AI will become a specialism, AI in testing. We've had such a focus on test automation, but maybe that will balance itself out with AI needs, or maybe like AI will end up doing a lot of the automation work instead of test automation experts. Or, you know, I think that's interesting. For me, like with AI, it's like a lot of the tool vendors are kind of like adding AI onto the existing tools. I saw a tool a few weeks back that kind of caught my eye. That's not a testing tool, but it basically, when problems occur, it tries to tell you about the problems and where they have occurred. And then they send the information off to relevant people in the team. So that kind of stood out to me because it's not trying to be like another test automation tool. It's just, you know, it's more like trying to solve the problem. I guess like if there's a code problem, developers can often spend hours looking for the problem in the code. And it ends up being a simple typo, but like if AI can like spot that for you like in minutes, that to me feels like using AI in a different kind of way rather than just kind of slapping it onto ways of how we test or how we have tested in the past. So I guess, you know, from that perspective, I'd love to see AI kind of be used to help us test, but not necessarily in the way that we've always tested.
Yeah, I think like there's in the quality process and just like how AI can be applied. I feel like I've seen a lot of AI tools sort of start popping up on defining and generating new test cases or, you know, instructions for automation tools or maybe like building the kind of the initial scaffolding of a test. I think I've seen a lot of AI tools do that. I think I've seen very few AI tools actually be following through with the execution of the tests, because the execution is the hard part. And I think this is kind of where you've gotten into, you mentioned hallucinations, is we've also seen that at Mobot with, you know, some of the early prototypes that we were, that we had encountered in tools that we were implementing ourselves at Mobot, is like sometimes the AI will tell you to, oh, go and tap this button that's not actually on the screen, but it just thinks it should be on the screen, which is almost funny because it reflects like how humans think, is you expect it to be a certain way, but that doesn't actually mean that that's actually what, you know, you're encountering in reality. And so can the test continue? Can you keep going? Or is this where the test fails because now you've not met the user acceptance criteria? And so I think the execution and decision-making piece of the testing process, I think that's where the opportunity around AI is. And I think that's also an area that we're working on. But I think what's also exciting, and I think a little bit more defined, is what you're also saying, is like the results interpretation, the data ingestion, and kind of like pattern matching that comes after, or even like in a post-production environment, being able to kind of like spot those patterns more proactively. I think AI is really kind of bookending the process right now, but I think there's sort of like that middle chunk that like, yeah, there's still too many hallucinations. We're still very much in the early days in the industry and how it will be applied actually to quality that, you know, I think it will take time and it's definitely something our team is actively working on as well. But yeah, I think it's not sort of like the magic bullet that sometimes it can be represented as, but because I've seen a lot of tools that basically it's almost like it creates a to-do list for you. It generates the test cases, like this is what you should test, but actually doing the things on the list and checking them off and making sure it was done correctly, I think that's actually the hard part. And that's the responsibility of why, you know, there need to be testers and quality managers and you know, the embedding of quality throughout an organization, is that ownership needs to continue to be handled by humans.
There's also a lot of risks that haven't really been followed through. And, you know, there's a lot of racism in AI, for example. There's a lot of ethical or potential ethical issues. And, you know, it's kind of scary, to be honest. And testers, from that perspective, I think are great. Like at the conference that we held, and you know, there were discussions about it, and it's great to see like testers kind of speaking about AI and exploring AI and pointing out the problems, right? And it's almost like the tech industry should probably pay more attention to what we're saying, because we're trying to look at the problems with AI and still be positive about it, but actually explore AI with that risk factor, because there are so many risks involved, even like, you know, like people trying to pretend to be other people or cloning voices and all of these things that are coming up as a result of AI. Even like the other day, it's not necessarily testing related, but the fact that when you go to search for, let's say, an animal on Google, so many of the results of the images are like AI generated images. And it's like, is this the future of our world where, you know, we won't know what's real or not anymore, or it's just going to like mess up our sense of reality? As testers, we think about these things and we question them, and yeah, it'd be nice if maybe we collaborated a bit more with other people, or if developers came to our conferences to understand what we're talking about or what we're concerned about, because testers naturally look towards risk and try to point it out.
Yeah, AI kind of depicts or presents to you what it wants or what things should be like or what we expect things to be like rather than what things actually are. And I think that is complicated because especially the role of testing, and I think why it continues to be such a business critical process in part of a company and a business, is because things are not always that simple, right? It's not just you can check a box and testing is done and you get to move on. Like, difficult decisions sometimes have to be made around prioritizing issues that come in, or should we keep this A/B test or this campaign turned on? Did this actually fulfill the requirements of the product specification, and did this undergo user acceptance testing? And it isn't this black and white done or not done thing. And I think AI tries to simplify some of those things, but why, you know, kind of like the human strategic element of building a quality process is so important is because things are not that black and white. You can't just simply hallucinate the button that you want to have on the screen to click on and then move on. You know, the test did not pass because in reality, something else happened that was unexpected or different. And a human knows how to course correct or kind of work around that or make a call like, oh, does there need to be a hot fix? Do we need to pause the release and go back and you know, take the time to investigate this or remediate this? So I think there is so much that still needs to be human that I hope all of these AI tools will really accelerate and make it easier to make decisions and kind of like exactly like you were saying before, drill into exactly what's going wrong. So no one has to be sent on like a wild goose chase for several hours to figure it out. But I think, yeah, there's so much decision-making process in a quality process that I don't think AI is at that level yet. And so I think that's kind of the way that we see it at Mobot as well, is that like if there's ways to streamline, make things faster, provide more relevant information, that's great. But yeah, you have to be really, really careful. We're still kind of in the early stages of the industry, but it's definitely exciting. But I think, yeah, there needs to be a continued dialogue. And I think that's why having a community like Ministry of Testing is really valuable for that, because there needs to be a place where we can have folks from all around the world have these important conversations with each other from different companies, different experiences. Otherwise, there's just too much siloing and people are not, you know, pointing out the patterns and kind of the challenges with AI. And, you know, AI is one thing, but I think just broadly, you know, in the whole industry. So yeah, I'm grateful that the community that you've built continues to exist.
Okay.
I guess one more question I have for you is, you know, we touched on like browsers and testing frameworks have evolved over the years. You've also seen, of course, as Ministry of Testing has taken off, like it used to be all about the web, but there is sort of an increasing, you know, demand for mobile, which is a different tech stack, a slightly different form factor and skill set. Curious how you've kind of seen like the conversation evolve with like web versus mobile. Are testers in the community focused on both, or is there some specialization? Like, are there similarities and differences between web and mobile that you've seen in terms of the way people talk about best practices or quality processes?
Yes, it's a good question. There is overlap. People do talk about mobile, but probably not nearly as much as web. So maybe, you know, there's a bit of a gap there to be talking more about it and like the challenges involved. And the idea of like mobile labs, for me, like running one yourself, is just like, it sounds intense. I'm not sure if I'd personally ever want that responsibility to manage so many pieces of hardware. But I guess mobile has come a bit later and perhaps needs a bit more time to mature and figure out better ways to test on mobile that's efficient, right? But yeah, I mean, I guess like you probably see more than me from the mobile perspective.
Yeah, I think it's definitely still, you know, as weird as it sounds, mobile is definitely sort of even in still sometimes in the early days. Because if we think about web and how long web browsers, Selenium, just like the DOM, you know, the document object model in the world of web is open source and it's been around for so long and everyone's used to it. They're building new frameworks, whether it's Selenium or Cypress or Playwright, and you know, new tools pop up all the time. And you know, I think that's fantastic. But I think, yeah, what's really different about the world of mobile is iOS and Android are still primarily kind of, you know, controlled by Apple and Google. And it's also been younger. I think the trends, the way people have used phones, smartwatches, Android Auto, CarPlay, Apple CarPlay, I think those are still like relatively new things. And I think we're still kind of in a world where new features, new use cases are being announced all the time. I think cameras are still evolving, hardware is still evolving. And so it's still kind of, yeah, on the earlier side when you contrast it to how stable it feels like web as a platform has been. And so I think, yeah, that's something that we're all in on the Mobot side, is we think it's going to get more complicated and we're here for it and we're here to build the solutions and tools to support that. but it is interesting. And I'm not surprised to hear that a lot of the dialogue that goes on at Ministry of Testing is probably more holistic focused, because of course, like, there's different testers and careers from all walks of life, all industries, and not every, you know, team has a mobile app yet. That's, I think, something that's going to change. I think people as a society, we've kind of been still defining, like, when does it make sense to build a mobile app, or when does it make sense to just use a mobile browser for something? And so I think that is something that, like, as a consumer, the consumer behavior is being defined. I think the role that quality is going to play with these different tech stacks, that's going to evolve. So I think in the next 3 to 5 years, things are going to accelerate pretty drastically. But I'm not surprised to hear that, like, there's still a lot that's being figured out. And I think it'll be interesting to see how automation and AI play a role into that.
Yeah, so there's even, I forget what you call it off the top of my head, but definitely a trend towards people not building the mobile apps and making it browser-based and having the app kind of available on your phone, but it's just connected via browser. So it's like, it's almost like, well, your mobile is essentially a mini computer or a mini browser, but it has the extra challenges of, well, you take it anywhere, and as a result of taking it anywhere, it gets complicated because of the challenges of just, like, moving about with your phone, I guess, is one of the issues that comes up.
Yeah.
So I guess, like, there's that difference. It's like, there's mobile testing with apps, and there's mobile testing was just, like, you know, using your browser. And do companies want to maintain an app and their website separately? And I think that's a trend for some people, some companies, to move away from that, because it becomes a lot to maintain over a period of time.
I think the more succinct way to describe it that I've seen is, like, if your app is just reading information, like, yeah, you're probably better off doing that in a browser. If it's read only and the consumer who's interacting with the product doesn't have to input a lot of information, there's not a lot of location services or push notifications, or you have to be at a specific place at a specific time to do a certain action, there's no kind of, like, Bluetooth peripheral involved. Absolutely. There's definitely been a trend of, like, yeah, at that point, you might as well just open a browser. But I think where we've kind of seen that, like, yeah, a mobile app is sort of necessitated is, yes, when there's transactions, interactions, more complex use cases. And then at that point, it becomes unavoidable. You kind of do have to build a mobile app. And I think there have been explorations with, yeah, having web views that are embedded inside native iOS and Android applications. And then also, you know, having, like, cross-platform, you know, single code base, like React Native or Flutter mobile applications. And those can be, you know, really beneficial. But I think when you sort of get into that world of, like, embedded web views in native apps, it's tricky to automate with Selenium, or it's tricky to automate with Playwright, because now the web view is inside the native part. So you have to test the native part, and Appium and Detox don't quite cover it and things like that. And so I think there's definitely sort of a gap where that's where manual testing ends up kind of happening. And I think that's also, you know, the area that we're interested in is, like, more realistic, real world use cases that continue to need kind of, like, innovative tools that are developed there. But yeah, I think there's definitely, you know, a shift in how folks think about designing mobile applications. When is it necessary to have one? But I think, like, that's kind of my personal thesis on this, is that, like, the frivolous, kind of useless read-only mobile apps, I think those will continue. We're going to see fewer and fewer of those apps, but it's kind of like the apps where, like, you have to have it because it's a real-world use case. I think those are going to become more prevalent, and I think hardware is going to become more proliferated and fragmented. But I think, yeah, there definitely needed to sort of be, like, this initial wave where everyone made a mobile app for almost everything. And then people sort of pulled back and were like, oh, wait, yeah, this can just be a browser thing. But then there's other use cases that, you know, I think can't be avoided. And it's just a much more embedded and holistic user experience if it is a native experience on mobile. And so that's kind of the trend that I've seen. But it's nice to know that you've kind of also observed the same thing from your community.
Yeah, and I guess, like, trends, just the way the world is going at the moment, is they change so fast, right? So it's hard to keep up. And, like, I think like the trend at the moment is AI, and people think they need to keep up. And to a certain extent, I think we do, but there's also a risk with like adopting things too fast, right? There's a lot of cost associated with trying to be first. But then you can also win by being first. It's like, you know, it's a really hard decision to make, whether you should adopt something or what path you should go down. And I guess that's just tech for you. It's like, it's complicated.
Yeah, for sure. I've really enjoyed this conversation, Rosie. Thank you so much for taking the time and kind of, you know, reminiscing and, you know, discussing with me sort of where the future is. I'm very excited for our community to continue to evolve. And I'm really looking forward to participating and being a part of Ministry of Testing as well. And, you know, I always keep tabs on what you guys are working on. So yeah, thank you for all that you do building this community for our industry.
Thank you for having me.
That's all we have time for today. If you're interested in being a guest on the show, or if you'd like to suggest a topic, find us on Twitter at Team Mobot. That's TEAMMOBOT. This show is brought to you by Heavybit, the leading investor in developer-first startups. To learn more about Heavybit, visit heavybit.com.